Namaste. So last two times we have spoken about aspiration and rejection, and we know that the third important aspect of yoga is surrender. But though it's normally we speak about aspiration, rejection, surrender, and ordinarily we say that aspiration is the one which begins first. Without aspiration, there is no yoga. But in terms of the processes of yoga, the methods of yoga, surrender is the most important one. Mother says, if you cannot surrender, don't start yoga. Very clearly she says. Because otherwise, especially this, she's speaking about integral yoga. There are paths which don't require surrender. The divine works like pure jnana yoga, you know, it doesn't really require, who am I, do this inquiry and discover. But this yoga goes into such a vast landscape, into completely uncharted territories, that if we don't have that surrender, we cannot proceed very far. This why surrender is the starting point of yoga. But like everything else, it's a process. Rejection is a process. It may start with small little things, and you know, it will go up to the extent that the whole old consciousness is gone in its place, the new is there. Aspiration, it may start with a few minutes, but slowly it will mount like an ascending fire till all our being, right up to the body cells, he would say, burns in that sacred fire. So surrender also is a process. It's not a one-day thing. And Aurobindo uses the word, it is a tapasya of tapasya. It's not easy. Though traditionally we distinguish between tapasya and surrender. Sri Ramakrishna spoke about it, and the mother also confirmed it, Aurobindo confirmed it. So, what is tapasya? Tapasya is where we rely on our own efforts. And people with a very strong individuality, especially in modern mind and, you know, the Western educated people, it's very difficult to surrender, because surrender means my individuality I'm going to lose. So, they're very afraid. So, they always want to know what is the method, what should I do, do's and don'ts, because the whole tuning is to preserve the individuality and then do the yoga. But in yoga, this individuality is going to go away. Something else is going to come. So we'll speak about that in course of time. But broadly, there are two paths. One is the path of tapasya, where we put in our efforts and we rely on our efforts. So many hours of meditation, so many times we do japa, so many breathing exercises, and we rely on that. But as Aurobindo points out, the divine does not give the fruits depending upon that. He's not a mathematical person sitting out there that, okay, he is doing 3 hours every day meditation, therefore I will give more. So the fruits of tapasya, if at all, they come not by that, but by the sincerity of the aspiration, of the seeking, which no outer thing can, be a evidence of that. It's something very inner. So this is the path of tapasya. It is compared to a baby monkey which is holding on to its own mother monkey with its own grasp. And it is wherever the monkey is jumping, it is going. But if it loses its hold, it will fall down. And sometimes the fall can be catastrophic or disastrous. In contrast, there is the other path, the path of surrender. In the path of surrender, there is the baby cat attitude, where we allow the baby is held by the divine mother, like the little cat is held by the mother cat, and the mother cat dangles and carries it here and there, everywhere. So she says that if you follow the path of tapasya on your own efforts only, then obviously it will depend upon your own efforts, how strong is the will, how developed the intelligence is, and how many hours one can concentrate. All these are the processes, and one can continue. But in this yoga, it will not take us beyond a point. So surrender is also, there is effort in it, but along with the effort, there is a complete reliance on the divine grace. This is what surrender means. Surrender is not absence of effort. Aurobindo points out that is a tamasic state. I will do nothing now, divine will do everything. Though Aurobindo says if you truly take that attitude, he will do. But the problem there is that then he will use methods which we may not like. Because we have said that you do everything, he'll say okay. But then instead of using gentler methods, sometimes he may use very methods which may seem to us very harsh and hard. Some people ask, why does God hammer this world like this? And Sri Aurobindo says that God hammers this world so fiercely because the material is so crude. But if the material becomes more plastic, more refined, then his methods also become gentler. So effort is a complementary thing to surrender. It's not antagonized to surrender. And why should one? If you look at it very logically, if I really want to reach the divine, I have a seeking for the divine, why would I say I don't want to put any effort? You do whatever you wish to do or feel like doing. That's not surrender. That means basically I am not really wanting the divine. Let's take an example that we are standing on the door, because this often people ask that, you know, I don't have to put in effort. Somebody is standing on the door to go to the ashram. Now, what do? You can wait that sometime some vehicle will come. But even waiting is an act. And then the vehicle comes. Now, we may have an idea, this vehicle, that friend, then only I will reach. So, all these thoughts are there within us, which we have not really offered to the Lord. Now, a truly surrendered person, what will he do? He will start walking. He is not waiting because he has to reach there. As he walks, suddenly he will see that somebody comes and says, okay, you are going to the ashram? Yes, I am going to the ashram. Come, sit in my car. And he will take us there. Now when he comes, we don't say, no, I must walk because, you know, I must do this much effort. No, then you will sit in the car. Because car has been sent by the divine to take us to the place where we intend to go. So effort also prepares us for the surrender, true surrender. Because then it's like we have stressed our limits and then we reach a point where we surrender. Otherwise, divine has to start from absolutely kindergarten level. So what we do with effort, we prepare ourselves for the true surrender. Because there is something which nature has given us. So we need to use it. And there will be a time when I need to supplement it. And that's when one offers, knowing very well that even the efforts that I am doing is also a gift of grace. So this is how one has to proceed. So what is the process of surrender? The first act of surrender is when we go to the divine. Why have we gone to the divine? That's where the whole rub lies. One may go to the divine and say that I have come here apparently for yoga, but hidden behind is all kinds of ambitions, seeking for power, comfort zone. Oh, I have come to divine. Now he will give me physical immortality. Even I have seen people come with this idea. Oh, this is the yoga which promises physical immortality. Or we may go to the divine and we think now I am comfortable. I'll be protected against all kinds of things. This is not surrender. Divine seeking is for the sake of the divine. So when we come to the divine, the first act of surrender is, I am yours. I belong to you. Start with this process. Now this is not like can be done mechanically. It has to be a state inside. But the first act of surrender is to say, I belong to you. Now what does it mean? Does it mean that I don't belong to anyone? I belong to the whole creation, but in a divine way and connected with the divine. Because divine is everywhere in everything. That should be very clear. But the first act is that I belong to you and to you alone. Otherwise, we create a division. Divine is somewhere else. Creation is elsewhere. So when we say I belong to the divine, means I belong to the divine, wherever I may be. Meaning thereby, if ever there is a question, if ever there is a choice between the divine and the path towards which we are traveling and something else, we have no hesitation in making the choice. See, this is what is we see in the Gita. When Arjuna said, I choose you, I don't choose your army. So Shri Krishna accepts the surrender. Now what happens? What does Shri Krishna do? He doesn't create a magic or, you know, the whole world is his maya. He could have easily just defeated the entire Kaurava army, said, Arjuna is now in my fold, he must win. He doesn't do that. So what does he do? He makes him stand in front of the battlefield and throws his Vaishnavi maya on him. So he is perplexed, he is confused, bewildered. And he says, I am not going to fight. But that's not the spirit of surrender. That is what Sri Aurobindo says. It's a tamasic surrender. So he says, no, you tell me what is the right thing for me to do. Now, at that point of time, Arjuna's vulnerable points are coming to the forefront. Divine is asking him to fight a battle, but he is attached to people. Now, if there is no choice, it's perfectly fine. But a choice has come at a critical point of time, and he must choose very clearly that I want to be with the divine. So belonging to the divine means that if ever there is a choice, and always there will be choices. Even in a, you know, we are supposed to see the divine in creation. What does it mean? It doesn't mean to accept all kinds of things in the name of divine is in creation. It is a divinity in the making. It's going towards a greater divine becoming. So we may choose the lesser and the lower and deny the higher. Or we may start with the lesser and lower and move towards the higher. This is the path of yoga. So effort has to be there even in surrender. But the first act is, I belong to you. The next step is that we have to confirm this surrender. How do we confirm this surrender? We have told one day and say, now I am fine. It's like now I am an ashram inmate. I have a tapa and now I can be whatever way I want to be because my name is in the prosperity list. It won't do. Time to time, we have to remind ourselves and remind the divine every morning when we wake up, I belong to you. Every time we stand, take me, accept me, because there is a period of time between our saying, asking, praying, aspiring, and the divine accepting. It's not like I have told today and divine has accepted. This is a well-known truth in ancient times that in yajna, you may do the offering, but the gods may not accept it. So why there is a time lag? Because the divine is seeing the sincerity. Is it really? Do you really want? Because once the divine says yes, the mother says, if you come to the divine and say, I belong to you, and the divine has said yes, this is the condition, then the whole world cannot keep us apart. So we should be very clear what it means. So we will be given a lot of choices and options to see, to test the sincerity of our surrender. Do we really want the divine for the sake of the divine? But a time comes when inwardly we know the divine says yes. So this is the first step, that I belong to the divine. And one keeps confirming it, keeps, you know, repeating it like a mantra day and night. Whatever I am, my destiny is in your hands. So when one does it, suddenly one will see that things are not going in favor, supposing. So that's the time our surrender is tested. I have told that my destiny is in your hands. Next time I have a fever, I'll say, oh, I gave you my destiny. What have you done with me? Somebody asked the mother. She tells a story that when someone came to the ashram first time, not to ashram, to India. It's quite likely her own story, we don't know. So as the person was stepping from the boat to the seashore, through the boat, suddenly a gold pen fell down and it got into the sea. So the person made a very interesting remark. Normally you would say, "Are, I am coming to divine place and this is what has happened to me." But the person made a very correct remark. He said, "Oh, but that is the effect of India. It has snatched away from me what I was very much attached to." So this question was asked to mother, that do calamities befall on those who turn to the divine? She said, "No, that's not necessary. It's not needed at all. But sometimes things may happen which we may think as calamities. But they are necessary because something new has to come. Certain old..." See, when we surrender our destiny to the divine, what it really means. Now, up till now, our destiny was woven by our own thoughts, feelings, actions, energies. We have let loose the cosmic forces based on the soul's eventual, future words, whatever it has to become. All this was shaping. Now, when we surrender to the divine, now what happens is, okay, I take the destiny in my hands. Now it is evolution fast forward. Many things which would have taken a few lives are suddenly removed. Many things which were to come after a few lives are brought into a life, because now it's something very different. It's a very, very rapid evolution which is taking place. So this is a huge difference. Ultimately, even the soul will realize whatever it's destined to realize. But when it surrenders to the divine, a new action begins to take place in our destiny, which can be very perplexing and very confusing if we don't keep on renewing this spirit of surrender. Because it will be tested every time we do this. So this is the second part of it, that we have to confirm it time to time and again. And then The third part of surrender is to offer and consecrate. Now what offering means? It is still mine. Surrender means to give all one is and has for the divine. Truly surrender means I have an intelligence limited. I give it to you, use it. What is not surrender? I have an intelligence. I will use it to analyze whether what you are saying falls true on my rational analytical thought or not. And mother says, if you do that, it's okay in ordinary life. I have my own ideas, opinions, viewpoints. But if you are face to face with the immensity called the divine, it will shatter. Imagine a drop going into an ocean and saying, I want to remain a drop. What will be its destiny? So, in ordinary life, it's okay. A drop is somewhere and it remains a drop. It's perfectly fine. But when we come to the divine and we surrender, it means now I am a creature of all these things. I give it to you. Meaning thereby, now this mind I offer to you. Let's take step by step each part of our nature. My thought, my intelligence, I offer to you. What does it mean? Now let us say we are reading something from Sri Aurobindo and the mother, and we read something which is contrary to my own ideas, beliefs, thoughts, understanding. So we can make one of the two approaches or one of the three approaches. One approach is, all that is fine, Mother and Sri Aurobindo have written, but that is something very high, very far. But right now this is true. This is not surrender. I am holding on to it and giving an excuse as if what they have said is not eternally true. It is true in some far off space of time. This one approach we can take. This is obviously not surrender. And if we do it, we remain what we are. The mind is not surrendered. Or we can take another approach. I don't understand really why Mother has said so. But I trust completely. So you see, in surrender, trust is implied. I trust what she has said. And let her reveal to me in her own way what is the truth behind what she has written. Now when we take this approach, we begin to grow. Because true surrender enlarges us. Initially we may not understand, but slowly as an act of this surrender, a new light begins to pour into us, awaken into us, and then we begin to understand the true meaning behind these words. Or we can take a third approach, that okay, fine, that is true, but right now I cannot practice it for whatever reason. And then I can pray and aspire that, Mother, give me the strength and courage to follow what you have written there. So you see, at different levels, we can surrender. But surrender of mind means whatever my ideas, viewpoints, opinions gathered from past, from so many sages, seers, countless other things, when I come to you, I give it to you, and now I receive whatever you give me. That's why many people who go to many paths, this guru, that guru, here, there, create confusion. Because it's all right when we have not started our foot on the path. It's perfectly fine. We should explore. But the moment we have set our foot on the path, then it should be this the approach. Because that path implies it. For instance, there are paths where we don't have to believe in all this, that, you know, virus is a vibration, because it's nothing to do with the world. It is about nirvana, moksha, nothingness. So you take whatever precautions normally you are being told, take that advice. But as far as your moksha is concerned, follow a certain practice and a discipline. For that path, it's perfectly fine. But in a world transforming yoga, it cannot do, because we have to understand what the world is based on the truths revealed to us by Mother and Sri Aurobindo, which at this point of time I may not understand, but I trust them and I give my mind, and slowly a new light will begin to dawn. So this is surrender of the mind. Then the heart. Now where is the difference? One is, I don't surrender my heart. I say, well, I am like this. I have this kind of feeling. I am full of jealousies, hatred, anger. What can I do? It's my nature. I know divine is all purity. There is divine love. It is so beautiful. I love the divine. But I don't want to change this part. Then there is lack of surrender of the heart. But surrender of the heart means I want to love the way divine wants me to love. The way divine loves this creation. Free of all that sordid attachments, desires, lust, greed, turbulences of jealousies, possessiveness, all that soils love. I don't want to love like that. I want to love the divine in creation, the way the divine wants me to love, the way the divine loves. I want to love the divine also in the true way, not with all my, you know, the vital demands and expectations that I love you, now you do this for me, but I want to love you truly. Now when we take that approach, then we see that after some time, what happens to this heart? The divine touch clears it of all this sordid things. You see, desire, we think desire is natural. It's not natural, incidentally. Desire is not the true natural movement of the soul. Even where it may look like that, reaching out, it is not the true natural movement. Desire is something which comes from outside and corrupts it. Now, let's take for example that somebody is born to be a king, has kingliness, and governs a kingdom. Now he governs because that's how he is. It's his imprint upon him. He governs like Janak, he governs like Yudhishthir, he governs like the great kings, Vikramaditya, he governs like Ajatshatru, he governs like many of these great kings who were basically yogis in their own right. But what is desire? I want my neighbor's kingdom. I want to usurp that kingdom. I am eyeing on this kingdom because I want position, I want name, I want fame. This is desire. But there are certain things in the play of the world, they will come to us very naturally. And we have to accept them with all humility and gratitude and do with them what best can be done, knowing that they are gifts and we are offering it to the divine constantly, so that whatever has come in our life may become more and more beautiful, more and more divine. There is no desire element in it. Even if there is a concealed desire deep within, when we take this attitude of offering everything to the divine, we see that slowly he will start removing all these elements which have come from outside. You see what happens even in something which is known as true love. Desire may intrude and corrupt that whole thing. But we have to keep reminding ourselves that the true movement is not this. The true movement is something else. If anger comes, we have to keep it away. Then whole life becomes a yoga and the heart begins to become purified of all the dross, and it becomes something very sweet, infinitely beautiful, infinitely full of love. Because now it's no more. See, when we don't expect love from anywhere outside, and we just, for all our love, we turn to the divine, then what happens? We are open to what source? Infinite source. And not to any limited thing. But we may give love to everything around. We may even have special relations, because psychic being in us is connected like that. We don't know through how many lives in different ways. But we are not wanting anything from anyone. This want is a corruption of something which is true and beautiful inside. So when I turn my emotions to the divine and surrendered my emotions to the divine, how can I allow in this chalice meant for the divine wine to such things like anger, bitterness, hatred? This is not what I want to, you know, offer to the divine. I want them to be away. And by the touch of the divine, even when these movements arise, we offer it. So offering and consecration means, first offering, whatever is there in me, I offer to the divine. And slowly when I offer it to the divine, his touch begins to change it. So that is called offering perfected becomes consecration. We consecrate it, still mine, but I am consecrating. Consecration means now the divine touches it and gives it back to us. Like, you know, when we give to the king takes a little bit and passes it on. Like olden time, there was this Nazrana. When people had to give something, so what do they do? They give it to the king, you distribute. Now we have this practice here, no? You want to give all the, dining room some misti on a particular occasion. What is the process? We give it to mother. I mean, doesn't matter whatever is the human intermediary. And then it is given to all. You don't say, okay, today I am going to give this and start distributing it. So consecration means I have given to the divine and now the divine will give it to all. So by consecrating things, this ego element and everything begins to go away from nature. Then we have within us a will. It's not only thought and feelings, but will. This is the weak spot in all human beings, most human beings. So what do I do with my will? Some people say, I've surrendered, so I don't need to use my will anymore. This is a dangerous doctrine. I have a will. So what do I do? It is a limited will. I surrender it to the divine. And I ask help. I have a weak will. Make it strong. So slowly the will become more and more strong. Then I want to will what you will in me. So after some time, a state comes when within us the pravritti will arise, which is from the divine. It's no more something personal to us. It is the divine will which begins to operate. But it can be very dangerous unless we have really. So one should remain vigilant. One should not get into one's own will and say, well, it's divine will. But this, one must keep on orienting. Even if it is my will, and for a long time it is like that, keep on referring, opening, entrusting to the divine that I don't know really, but I am giving it to you. You do with it what you want to do with it. Because very often will and desire can get mixed in human nature. And then the divine will slowly illumine, give us the strength necessary, purify it, till the will, till we act. Now, what is the ultimate thing in will? Just like in thought, there is a spontaneous illumination which comes from above when mind is surrendered. In the heart, there is a natural flow of sweetness and warmth and love and light. In the emotions, clarity, not turbidity, because it is surrendered to the divine. So what happens in the will? One acts under spontaneous inner inspiration. Shobindu speaks of that. How to know that divine will is guiding us? So it will arise. There is a word called enthusiasm. There is something which will arise from within. And we act under that. Of course, it needs a long process of consecration. It's not like everything spontaneous within me is divine. There is a vital spontaneity. But if over years and decades one has trained offering one's will, then a time comes when one acts under that divine impulsion. It is the divine impulsion. And then the action has a very different destiny, it has a very different flavor than when we act under vital spontaneity. What is the difference between vital spontaneity and the divine spontaneity? Vital spontaneity makes us more and more restless. But divine spontaneity, still it will be there, that element, not restlessness, but there is that certitude that this is how it should be. But it is in a state of surrender. So because of the constant surrender, there will be a calm which will keep entering inside along with the action of the will. It's a calm will, not a restless will. Not a will which wants to grab, possess, own. That's not the true will of the divine. Always brings along with it a state of surrender, a state of calm, a state of trust in the divine grace. So this is how one has to keep orienting the will. And a time should come when even the body. So how do we surrender the body to the divine? People often say, speak of the yoga of the body, and they ask how to do the cellular yoga. Very simple things. What do we use the body for? As an instrument. Instrument of what? When I am pushed by the vital, it is an instrument of the vital being in us. When I am pushed by imperfect, turbid emotions, then it's an instrument of that. When I am pushed by my own views and opinions about life, then it's an instrument of that. Body is a docile instrument. When I am pushed by the awakening of the spiritual consciousness within me, then our body is becoming an instrument. Let's take about it practically, step by step. Now, the commonest instrument is we speak. So why? What is this instrument meant for? It is meant to express the divine truth, divine light, divine ananda, divine sweetness, divine love, divine beauty, divine harmony. Speech should create that. But normally this instrument, which is the most readily accessible instrument, is given to anger, quarrels. So where is yoga of the body? Very far. This is the instrument through which we are expressing. What about the hands? They should become instruments for the divine working. So whatever we are doing with the hand, countless things throughout the day, it should be done with this idea that, Mother, these hands are yours. Use them. Then slowly even consciousness will develop in the hands. But if we use the hand for all kinds of fighting, you see, when people are angry, what happens to the hands? There are gestures. Why? Because hands are now being used by the demons by the asuras. You have seen, there are gestures of the hand which can be very threatening. They are used to project fear. That's why this whole science of the hands, you see, there is Abhay Mudra. You see, when the divine, when he gives Abhay, even when the divine is expressing Rudra Bhav, what does he do? He doesn't take up boxing and says, I am going to give a punch. It's a different state altogether. So this is how even our hands, our feet, our walk should become graceful, beautiful. Because he is beautiful. He is graceful. Not clumsy, because the body has to become an instrument. Now we don't have to do it thinking, oh, my walk should be graceful. Let's practice ramp walking. That's not divine yoga. That's showing off. See how well I walk. Now everything has been corrupted. That's the problem. Beauty has been corrupted. One of the most corrupted things is beauty and grace and charm, and they all come from divine. But spontaneously, and it, we don't have to do anything mentally. When we consecrate the body to the divine, it will begin to pick up that posture. You see, there is a divine posture. Sometimes when we see, you know, even Vishnu is lying. What a graceful way. He's lying. He's lying with his eyes closed. But you feel that there is Aishwarya in it. And this is only, we have not seen the original Vishnu. What it must be. But when we lie, we don't even know how we are lying. Where the leg is going, where the hand is going. So the whole body, when we surrender, it begins to assume each of its actions can become something very beautiful, full of that charm and sweetness and touch of the divine grace. So everything we can surrender, and when we surrender, what happens? Mother says, there is a misconception that surrender diminishes us. But true surrender enlarges us. It aggrandizes us. It picks up our little capacities and transmutes them into something divine. Have you heard about the walk of how it is described in some of the scriptures? You should read the Mahabharata. It says, when Arjuna is walking, says, as a lion amongst men. This is Indian thought. Why? Because Arjuna is a divine instrument. So when he walks, as a lion amongst men he walks. It doesn't mean he has to become 8 packs and 6 packs. That has nothing to do with a lion. A lion's walk is a confident walk, full of quiet strength, fearless, calm courage. That's a leonine walk. Even when it walks into the mouth of death, it is not coward. It doesn't say, oh my God, death is going to come, what will happen? No, it is never a coward. It walks towards that, and it walks with courage, calm courage, quiet strength. That is the power of a lion, leonine walk. So all this must be, it's part of when we surrender our body. Otherwise, if we leave this part, then it doesn't matter whatever way it is happening. So the entire machinery from top to bottom, so the initial surrender, I belong to you, must become a detailed surrender. How to make it a detailed surrender? Step by step is when you wake up in the morning, somebody is waiting out there. Good morning, Ma. I love you, Ma. Gratitude, Ma. Be with me. Let me move the way you want me to move. What a beautiful way to begin the day. Then we'll go into various activities, WhatsApp, email, whatever. Our thing. It's okay. We are not sannyasis, please. We are not following the ascetic path. Then we should not be here. It's life. Of course, we should have a degree of, you know, discipline and all that, but it will be various things. We'll go to get ready. So what do we do when we go to the bathroom? All kinds of things are whirling into, now I'm getting ready. For whom? Whom do I want to impress? Lord, for you I'm getting ready. There's a very beautiful song in a Hindi movie. One of my favorite one, but the song goes like this. I don't know whether you have heard or not. Can you guess what song I am going to सजना है मुझे सजना के लिए. हु इज द सजना? सजना इज फॉर दोज यू मे नॉट नो हिंदी, सो सजना इज द बिलवेड. सो आई एम, बट सजना ऑल्सो मीन्स आई एम गेटिंग ड्रेस्ड अप. फॉर हुम आई एम गेटिंग ड्रेस्ड अप? फॉर माई डिवाइन बिलवेड. सो वॉट ड्रेस यू विल वेयर? नॉट वेरी गॉडी. ही विल बी हॉरिफाइड टू सी ऑल काइंड्स ऑफ यू नो गॉडी थिंग्स. नॉट लाइक ए एसेटिक लॉइन क्लॉथ. ही विल से वॉट इज दिस? सी द ड्रेसिंग सेंस विल इम्प्रूव. समथिंग सिंपल, ग्रेसफुल, ब्यूटिफुल, डिग्निफाइड. That's how we'll go, no? We'll not... Of course, if we wear a hot pants, he will welcome us, no problem. But when I dress up for the divine, automatically the dressing sense will improve. You may wear a half pant, doesn't matter. But it'll be something which will carry its own charm. You know, Mother in Shrivindo's initial mother would wear a sari. And somebody asked, Mother has always worn Western clothes. So when she came, she wanted to wear a sari. So I'm forgetting now the name. She asked somebody who, was it Chabidi or some, anyway, she asked her to teach her how to wear a sari. So when she was asked, Mother, why do you have to wear a sari? You know what her answer was? Because Sri Aurobindo likes it. Sri Aurobindo was fond of sari. He said, you know, it's very graceful. I'm not saying that we should make a cult out of it. From today onwards, everybody will wear a sari. That's how religions are born. It's okay. She made also people wear, girls wear half pant and t-shirt. So don't, you know. But the point is that when we dress, we can dress up. Similarly, when we use a perfume, what if we just apply for a few moments, what kind of things the divine will like? We will get the answer. Something soft, gentle, refined, beautiful, flowers, everything. So beauty is an aspect of the divine. So we are getting ready, offering to the divine. While we are under the shower, Mother, may your light purify me. And then we come out fresh. We sit for quiet meditation, offering our day to the divine. And then we start the day. Before we see a patient, before, you know, I'm talking of medicine, but there could be any other profession. When we go to the office, what do we do first thing? Generally, people call their secretary. Come, come, come. Okay, tell me, what are the appointments? Or flip, no. Give a moment of quietude. I used to even play Sunil Das music. Kept a little photograph of the mother on the side of the table. No, this is a moment of concentration. If somebody said, sir, so and so is waiting, I said, yes, let him wait. I'm also waiting. I'm waiting for someone who must first come. So pray. Just a few minutes. You don't have to spend, close the eyes and, you know, chant an om and make a show of all this. No. In secular ways. Sit quietly. Call her presence. Mother, it's your office, your chair. You have given me to sit. I'm sitting here. Tomorrow somebody else will sit. I may be somewhere else. But as long as you have asked me to sit, let me do your work. Spend a few moments in quietude, invoking a presence, and then start the work. In ashram, most people, I think, are aware of this. But many younger generation may not be. Older generation knew this. You know, that's how they used to work. And then we are working. For whom am I working? Am I working for a pay packet? Am I working for promotion? Am I trying to please my superior? Am I eyeing on the post that chair which is not mine today and will not be mine day after tomorrow? I'll get one day to sit on it. Then it is not mother's work. So I am doing it as a seva to you. So when we do seva, we get ananda instantly. Other things are later on. Divine will look after. Whatever we need, he'll provide. Pay package and all is divine's lookout. But our job is to serve wherever. So this is surrender. Then in between, time to time, to remember and offer. This is the mantra Mother has given. Remember and offer. We are going for a walk. Remember and offer. Mother, I am going for a walk. Pray, come with me. Then after it is over, Mother, thank you. Simple things, not a complicated things. Mother, I am going for a talk. Speak through me. Mother, I am going to hear. Mother, may it be you who hears and understands. You know, the ideal state of a speaker should be where not only the speaker but even the listeners are none else but the divine. There are no two. How beautiful, no? It awakens the divine consciousness in everyone. If we live in this state of unity and oneness, it's not like somebody is explaining like a teacher and somebody is receiving. It's a joy, the ananda of a manifold divine. That's beautiful because that's the truth. We are all divine in our secret essence. And that's how one is spending the day. You are going for a movie. Mother can come along. What is there? We have movies in the ashram, no? Saturdays, but people who are outside don't have this privilege. You want to watch a good movie? Watch it. Watch a good movie. It's not an ascetic yoga. And pray to Mother. Mother, you be with me. Then what will happen is, we will start seeing things which we had not saw earlier. The whole movie will carry a different message without trying anything. The whole songs will convey something else to us because now we are watching it with a different eye altogether. She comes and watches with us. And when she is watching, she is not seeing like any other ordinary person involved with the movie, with the vital, taking the thrill and word, crying because something is happening in the movie. She will make us a student of the entire range of human nature. And so on and so forth, right up to sleep, and all activities within it should be done in a state of remember and offer, remember and offer, remember and offer. Now when we do it, after some time, this becomes a background state of consciousness. It doesn't matter. It becomes a spontaneous offering. How to remember? By her name, Ma. Before eating, remember and offer. Before drinking a glass of water, remember and offer. Everything. So beautiful. Life can be divine. Life is a flow of divinity from day to night, from night to day. So everything, dream. I want to have some nice dreams. I want to see you. Mother, I offer my nights. Mother actually gives this example. That I offer my nights and the dreams to you. Wonderful. And it doesn't need, just needs a sincerity. It's not about time that I have to sit in meditation like that. Fine, if you can do it, very good. But even if you cannot, it just needs a few moments of sincere. Important thing is not mechanical, it's from the depths. So when we start changing our life, then we reach a point in surrender where we practice perfect obedience to the divine will. That's the culmination. It's not easy. It comes long period of effort. Complete adhesion to the divine will. We become a doll in the hands of the divine. Whatever he wants, that he does. He plays with us and we play this great world game. That is the state one has to reach where there is perfect obedience. Now, the mother says something very interesting. You cannot practice surrender if you don't have the other qualities. What are the other qualities? She says aspiration, rejection, not rejection, she doesn't speak there, but those five qualities in a champak flower, you know, those five qualities, that five petal champak flower, we have aspiration, faith, courage, devotion, surrender. She says, but to practice surrender, you have to have all of them. Why? Because, oh mother, I belong to you, or mother, I have given to you. But there is no aspiration. Nothing will support it. Aspiration is what carries our offering to the seat of the Lord. Faith. If I don't have faith, then I say, mother, I belong to you. If I come out and I slip and get down on the floor and I say, mother, but I had offered to you. But a person with faith will say, whatever way, did I not surrender just now? So faith and courage. Surrender means now she is the one who decides our life. Which means there may not be comfort zones that I cherished. It needs tremendous courage to come out of our comfort zones. I want to belong to the divine, I want to serve the divine, easy to say. But it means stepping out of the boundaries of our little comforts. But what a wonderful thing that we belong to the divine. I mean, what greater felicity than that. Then she says, devotion. What is the use of surrender if there is no love and devotion for the divine? No gratitude. But she says, most important is endurance. Because when you surrender, the divine will take you in his own ways. He says, sometimes, hundreds of times, you have to face the same problem. Because divine wants to perfect. Now it is in the divine hands. You can't tell him that, no, I am fine. I am a good guy. Divine, please stop. He'll say, no. You have surrendered to me. I am not happy. You may be happy. You are not yet a finished product. I am going to shape every little detail. Have you ever seen people, those goldsmiths working? Amazing. Sit and watch sometimes. You may feel, ho gaya, because you are in a hurry. You just want. But a true fellow will say, no. I have experienced it once and I have been amazed. But not all goldsmiths will be like that. Maybe somebody will, just do a good job. And I am not going to take the name of the person. It's not an advertisement class. But gently working. And after some time, you forget that you have come to pick up something and you are in a hurry. You are watching and it's so beautiful. It's a worship that is going on. So after a while, when divine takes up perfecting our nature, he is not going to make us into a salesman with a nice smile and we are happy with ourselves, puffed up, I look good. No, I may look good in my eyes, I may look good in the eyes of the world. But the divine wants us to shape us into divine perfections. He says, you should be armed with an endurance that 1,000 times, 10,000 times if you fall, and you face the same difficulty in a slightly different way, you are ready to face it and say, whatever time it takes, do it in your own way, but I want this. This is the attitude of true surrender. So we'll read something with which I wish to close. Something from Sri Aurobindo and something from the mother. So Sri Aurobindo says, the mother says that what is the attitude of surrender? She says, when you stand before the divine, you offer yourself and what do you say? Here I am, a creature of various qualities, good and bad, dark and enlightened. It's not that I have to look good and then only. I am what I am, to see it correctly, sincerely. And then we offer it. I offer myself as I am to you. Take me up with all my ups and downs, conflicting impulses and tendencies. Do whatever you like with me. Then there will be a process. We should be ready. Narada, so surrendered. One day he said, I want to get married to a beautiful woman. She is, So divine says, okay, what do you want me to do? Make me handsome. And the rest, it was a monkey face. Because he loved Narada. Otherwise, he would have let him go through a long process of experience. And Narada goes, he curses, and the divine takes it upon himself. Because that is a relation between him. So, he will then take us on his own course. Another story of Narada is where he got married. And after 12 years, he realized one day everything was snatched away. And he's crying inside, why you did this with me? Oh, cruel one. Then he said, cruel one, to baad mein I am waiting for that water. I asked you. And then he remembers, oh, I completely forgot. So this is how, that's a very beautiful story, because Krishna deludes him and Krishna releases him. He is the illusion maker and he is the one who grants release. Why? Because you have to march like that. You cannot skip states. Krishna is not like Shiva. You finish and from Samshan I will take you further. Mahakal. Krishna helps us move through the march of mankind. And Sri Aurobindo comes from that evolutionary avatar. All avatars of Shivas are like giving moksha, finishing the knot. But all the avatars of Vishnu are evolutionary avatar. They take you through the march of mankind. Through the journey. So this journey may take long or whatever. But we keep referring that mother, all this needs to be worked. I understand it like this and give it to her. So it means correctly seeing oneself. Not, just because everybody says you are wonderful. So you also start feeling deluded. Oh, I must be a very wonderful person because everybody says. People live in ignorance. What does their opinion count? Be what you are and offer it to the Divine Mother. She will shape us into the true thing. So, Here I am, a creature of various qualities, good and bad, dark and enlightened. I offer myself as I am to you. Take me up with all my ups and downs, conflicting impulses and tendencies. Do whatever you like with me. And then Sri Aurobindo's core of inner surrender. What is inner surrender about? Core of inner surrender is trust and confidence in the divine. Without that, because once divine takes up our life, it will not be according to my mental planning. Gone. You see, when baby monkey becomes a baby cat, then what happens? He dances as the Madari tells it to dance. So, what she will do with us, we don't know. But we have trust and confidence. I want the divine and nothing else. His time and way. Let him take his time and his way. You are not even impatient. Let him take his time and his way. Let him do all in his own time and way. It cannot be anymore my way. It is his way. It cannot be within this much time. Impatience. Impatience is a sign that there is no surrender. Let him take his time. I shall believe in him. Accept his will. Aspire steadily. Go through all difficulties and delays, relying on him and never giving up. This is the core of inner surrender. Surrender does not mean there will be no difficulties. There may be even more, but because we are surrendered, we'll go sheltered. Surrender never means that I have surrendered, now you know I'll have no problems in life. There is no evolution without challenges. If somebody wants, no, they are not difficulties, they are challenges. Somebody says, I don't want challenges, I don't want to make my choices. Fine, then stay where one is, till nature will one day come and push us. But surrender means there will be difficulties. But we will go sheltered in the arms of the divine. We'll go through it. There will be Kurukshetra. Remember when Arjuna surrendered to the divine, what happened? He said, okay, you are ready? Sure? Yes. Sure you want me? Yes. Okay, now come to Kurukshetra. Gori war, where he lost everything. His children, his family, everything gone. Isn't it? Those whom he loved and cherished. But what did he get in the end? Krishna. You cannot think of Krishna on Kurukshetra without thinking of Arjuna. Nar Narayana. That is the supreme felicity. The eternal companion and friend becomes your friend. What more we want in the great battle of the ages? So surrender doesn't mean there will no more be difficulties. It only means that the divine will now take us in his way through whatever comes, and we have to have that complete trust that whatever is happening in my life, whatever has happened and yet may happen, you are the one who is carrying me. And complete trust in that. See, Sri Aurobindo's own life, complete surrender to the Divine Mother. And he had to go through the jail, coming here, sometimes doesn't know what is going to, whether dinner will be there or not. This is the state of surrender. We see perfectly in the life of Mother and Sri Aurobindo. Somebody asked in the ashram, give us example of somebody who has surrendered. And a so-called advanced sadhak said, there are only two persons who have surrendered. But I am whispering to you, don't share it with anyone. Yes, yes, tell me, who are those advanced sadhaks who have surrendered? Sri Aurobindo to the mother. Second one, and the mother to Sri Aurobindo. Always, always, Lord, Lord, Lord. If ever, whatever Sri Aurobindo said was for her the final word. And for Sri Aurobindo, if he has said something and somebody said, but mother has said, oh, mother has said so? Okay. Mother's word was for him the final word. And for the mother, Sri Aurobindo's word was the final word. That is surrender. So with this I'll close. Core of inner surrender is trust and confidence in the divine. We say, I want the divine and nothing else. Let him do all in his own time and way. I shall believe in him accept his will, aspire steadily, go through all difficulties and delays, relying on him and never giving up. To give up is lack of surrender. It means I was relying actually on my own efforts. But if I have surrendered to the divine, he knows how to do it, when to do it, what is the right time. So, to give ourselves in the hands of the divine is the greatest of all felicities. May we all experience that felicity in our own life. Greatest of all joys. Namaste.